it's the day before the day before 2013.
It's New Year's Eve Eve?
New Year's Eve Eve, indeed. You're listening to Ask an Atheist. My name is Sam, and with me for the first segment is Mike. How are you?
I'm doing moderately well.
Moderately well. Okay, that's a new high. How was your quantum fight with Deepak Chopra in the 15th dimension or wherever you went last week?
I thought it mostly just happened in my own imagination. I fought him on the astral plane.
Yeah.
It was like a Doctor Strange comic.
So how was your holiday?
I enjoyed it. It was very low key. I'm someone who works retail.
Yeah.
So I'm somebody who loves Christmas, but not the Christmas season.
Gotcha. Okay. So the holiday's nice, but the shoppers you want to fire into the sun.
Well, if there's one thing I've learned over my years working in retail is that I can't kill people telepathically.
That's good. I'm okay with that. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. Give us a call if you got one in you. And actually, I got a very nice gift from you for the holiday. I got a first edition Dune.
Yes.
Yeah, which is something I've always wanted, never had it before. And what I love about it is that it was published by Chilton's, the company behind all of the manuals that tell you how your car breaks.
How did that happen, by the way?
They wanted to break out into other types of media instead of just, you know, books about cars and stuff like that. And so they thought about getting into fiction. And Herbert was having trouble finding a publisher for the book. And they said, yeah, we'll do it.
So they went from, you know, just doing car manuals to, I guess, anti-imperialist uprisings on desert planets?
Yes, yeah, to allegory about the oil wars. So... Well, we should really talk about Peggy's challenge. We've gotten a lot of feedback, and we haven't really mentioned it recently. And we actually heard recently from Peggy herself, and she writes to us and says, I'd like to thank the producers of Ask an Atheist for your work and your great year of programming. I'd also like to thank your listeners who continue to support the show by their contributions. I'd like to kick off the new year by sending a contribution to sponsor one of the new episodes for 2013. Keep up the good work, and it is much appreciated. Happy New Year! Well, we could get some paper towel. This is really good news. We also have some other people who've given us some money. We've got Donna from North Chesterfield, Virginia, Ronnie from Herning, Denmark, Scott from Langley, British Columbia, and Eric from Everett, Washington. We need this to keep going, guys.
And lots of repeat contributors here. That's actually the thing I like.
A lot of repeat contributors. So, this is the last episode of season 10, the increasingly irrelevant nomenclature for how we number the shows. And I think we've had a pretty good year, wouldn't you say, Mike?
Yeah, I think this has been a great year. We've had some really good episodes. We've had some great interviews with people like Michael Nugent from Atheist Ireland. We've had a lot of folks on the show. We've talked about a lot of great topics. Our viewership is up. That's always a plus. I've been really happy with the stuff we've done here on Ask an Atheist. I think that I say we're actually doing a show that we can really be proud of. I'd like to go even further this next year and have a lot of things that we haven't been able to do yet. But I think that interviews that had seemed at one point completely unattainable to us are seeming a bit more realistic now.
I can't believe we actually got to interview James Randi in 2012.
Think that was he was a definite bucket list interview that I would hope that we would have the chance to do sometime. And the fact that we got to interview him and we're not even yet 3 years old is really a milestone, not only for the show, but I think for any sort of atheist programming that's on broadcast media.
Yeah, well, I can tell you that in the, in the coming year, this is year three of Ask an Atheist. Can you believe we've been doing this for 3 years?
Sometimes I feel it more than others.
But we've got some really cool stuff happening with Ask an Atheist online and off. We've got some new interviews coming out. We got some new show formats, show ideas coming out. And we're also, like any good band, we're starting up on some side projects, aren't we, Mike?
Yes, I have a couple things that I'm working on the side. I don't think I'm quite yet to announce anything formally.
Okay.
But I have a podcast side project that I'm probably going to be unveiling sometime next month.
Mm-hmm.
I have to finish some editing. I've got some re-records that I need to do.
Yeah.
But other than that, Sam is a part of it. So if you're a fan of Ask an Atheist, you'll hear some voices that you on this podcast first episode that you're going to find very familiar.
Yeah. So keep an eye out for that. And one of the things that we really need to talk about on Ask an Atheist is what this today's show is going to be about. We've sort of taken up causes, I mean, informally, as the show's been going on. We did Countdown to Backpedaling in 2011. Mm-hmm. In 2012, Referendum 74 was something that we thought was very important. And so we're looking for something that we could talk about on the show. One of those things we've already started doing, which is the blasphemy stuff. We've been really focusing on blasphemy around the world, usage of blasphemy laws. But there's we also want to do something in Washington. We've really enjoyed, showing people what politics and what things in Washington are like from an atheist perspective. And so one of the things that we need to talk about, one of the things, and we're sort of launching this today, is we're going to start talking a lot more about vaccinations and the anti-vaxxer conspiracy theories that are out there. Like, one of the things people don't know about Washington State is that it has some very lax vaccination laws.
Yeah, this is something that I just learned today. I was under the impression that they were actually a bit more restrictive than they actually are.
Yeah.
When I get the details, and we're going to get into that a little bit later on, I'm sure, it's something that really kind of horrified me. And I know that Sam and I have been talking about doing vaccination and really hitting hard on a lot of the deaths and sicknesses and illnesses of diseases that have been long conquered,
yeah,
popping up again around the country, but particularly in this state in recent history. And it's pretty horrifying that, and what I see at the heart of this is this sort of non-science, non-evidence-based thinking,
yeah,
that people are dying of things that we have dealt with. This is settled. We know how to deal with things like scarlet fever. We know how to deal with things like the mumps and measles, but these things are coming back.
Yeah.
And it's really alarming because it's not just, I think if there's one thing that I've really taken from this is that magical thinking, harmful, ideological rather than evidence-based thinking is not something that's limited to just fundamentalist Christians. It's something that you see on people who are otherwise very progressive, very educated. And you have these real blind spots in their thinking that have sometimes really devastating results.
Yeah. In Washington State, and for the rest of this episode, there is one specific disease that we're going to be focusing on. It's known as pertussis or whooping cough. And there is an epidemic of this disease in areas of Washington State. There are people who are getting this disease, this disease which is completely conquerable, it's completely curable, as people vaccinate, which they're not doing because of bad science, because of thoroughly discredited science. And this is causing newborns to die because they're catching this disease because there's issues of herd immunity and stuff like that. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. So we're going to go to a break. And when we come back, we're actually going to have some experts on to talk about whooping cough. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480.
The perfect Mormon wife in the perfect Mormon town has a secret. She doesn't believe in God. Her husband has a secret too. He's in love with another man. She's stood by her husband for 2 years, but when she meets a man who calls himself X, an artist traveling through the western states, her resolve to be the perfect wife finally crumbles. Baptism for the Dead, a novel by Libby Hawker, explores one woman's loss of faith in modern-day America. Get your copy today from your favorite ebook retailer. Paperback edition coming soon.
So, picking you up at 8 tonight?
Sure.
How do I get to your place again?
Get off the freeway, turn left at the burger joint, past the Humanist Center, right at the...
What? Humanist Center?
Yeah, the place where freethinkers have their meetings, hold events, access the resource library, drop their kids off for daycare.
This could be you and your friends in the near future. Contribute to the Humanists of Washington Humanist Center Fund to establish a physical home for freethinkers in the Puget Sound. Go to humanistsofwashington.org and contribute today. That's humanistsofwashington.org.
Atheism TV. News, events, community, entertainment, debates, conferences. A massive repository of over 3,000 recent and fascinating atheist videos from all over the internet. Or watch The Infidel, our own regular news show. Visit the shopping area and buy something for that special atheist in your life. Or rent captivating shows, movies, and documentaries directly in your browser. Atheism TV, the world's best source of atheist videos. Visit atheismtv.com.
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. good. Call us. Leave us a message. Call Ask an Atheist at 206-420-0997 and vent your spleen now and for the future. That's 206-420-0997 and wait for the tone.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And Mike is taking a break, but with me is Becky. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
And Eileen, hello. Oh. Whoops. How you doing?
Hey, great. How are you?
Okay. And with us also is somebody I've really wanted on the show for a while, Dr. Harriet Hall. How are you?
I'm fine.
Great. Harriet Hall is a retired family physician and former Air Force flight surgeon. She writes about medicine, so-called complementary and alternative medicine, science, quackery, and critical thinking. She's an editor of one of the five MD founders of the Science-Based Medicine blog, and is a contributor to Skeptic Magazine, Skeptical Inquirer, and the Quack Watch website. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah.
So one of the things that we wanted to talk about is really this pertussis outbreak that has been happening in Washington State. And, you know, pertussis is a bacterial infection. It causes severe respiratory symptoms. It's also known as whooping cough, as Sam and Mike said before the break. And it's really from the whooping sound that one makes during these spasmodic coughing fits. It's, you know, in adults, it's usually just a bad cough, but in young children and immunocompromised people, it can lead to severe complications and even death, as Sam mentioned. It can be prevented with routine childhood vaccination and adult booster shots. And while it's endemic to North America, numbers of reported cases have really jumped in recent years, with outbreaks reaching epidemic levels in several of our counties here. In the first half of 2012 alone, we saw 2,520 cases, representing a 1,300% increase from 2011, and that's the highest number of reported cases since 1942. So it's really shocking what's going on here. And, you know, we wanted to talk about one of the reasons that pertussis is becoming more common, especially in Washington State, because of this decrease in the vaccination rates. You know, our state's laws permit any legal guardian to refuse vaccination of their child for religious or personal or philosophical grounds. And if a person demonstrates membership in a church whose beliefs or teachings does not allow for medical treatment, they aren't even required to be advised by a medical professional such as Eileen or such as Dr. Hall here on the risks or benefits of vaccinating your child. So, you know, part of this is really based on this misconception of how immunity and immune system work. So, Dr. Hall, in brief terms, how does the human immune system work?
You can't answer that briefly. The immune system is a large network with a lot of different factors. But the thing that's important to know when you're talking about vaccines is that when we get an infection, our body fights it off by forming antibodies, specific antibodies against the invading organism. And once those antibodies are in the system, later on, if the person encounters that organism again, it's able to recognize it and fight off the organism by producing antibodies. And vaccination is a way to provide those antibodies without having to go through the illness. So it's a great advantage.
So if we've already got those antibodies, why do adults need booster shots?
Because the effect tends to wane as we get older. For most immunizations, after five to 10 years after a shot, your immune system's memory isn't working as well, and it doesn't provide as robust a response as it used to. And that's true of the natural infections as well as the vaccines.
Dr. Hall, as a nurse, I get a lot of questions all the time before I administer vaccines to my patients. And one of them is, why do we need a different shot every year for the flu, for example?
Well, that's because the flu is sneaky. It keeps mutating and creating different antigens. So the ones that we used last year don't work as well. So we have to try to figure out which strains of flu are going to be prevalent in the community and try to put those into the vaccine each year, and it keeps changing.
So one of the things that we're noticing about the pertussis epidemic in Washington State is a lot of the victims are infants. So how does the immune response work with, you know, in the cases of infants? Do we immunize them early? Do they get immunized? And there's a phrase that I keep hearing called, you know, herd immunity, and does that play into this?
Okay. In the first place, children's immune systems work just the same as adults. And children are very good at developing immune responses. When they're born, they've never met any bacteria or viruses. They meet their first bacteria on the way down the mother's birth canal. And they are built to respond to all of these foreign things, and they respond to vaccines. But when babies are born, they carry some of the antibodies that they've got from their mother. So the age at which you offer a vaccine depends on that and on a lot of other factors. That's why some vaccines are given earlier than others.
Okay, so in the case of the pertussis and the pertussis vaccine, Eileen, you were talking about this earlier. There's sort of a different vaccines that you give for infants versus adults?
Yes, there are two versions of the vaccine. The first is the DTaP, which is the pediatric version, and Dr. Hull, please correct me if I'm incorrect. And then the Tdap is actually what the adults get, and that's what functions as the booster. It's a lower dose of the vaccination, but that's what functions as the booster, and that's what we encourage people to get after they've gotten the original series.
Okay. And I know we have a quote here, and since the quackery is something that you like to talk about and I like to hear about. got a question here. We have one Dr. Steven Edelson in his book, What Your Doctor May Not Tell You About Autoimmune Disorders. And he writes, injecting vaccines containing mercury into children, especially infants whose immune systems are still underdeveloped, hepatitis B shots are typically given at birth before the immune system is developed, but that can be an assault to the immune system. Does this accurately reflect how the infant immune system works, and should this cause pause for parents?
That statement is so bad it isn't even wrong. Injecting vaccines containing mercury. The vaccines don't contain mercury anymore, and even when they did, we don't have any evidence that the kind of mercury in vaccines ever hurt anyone. And infants' immune systems are not underdeveloped. They are developed well enough to do the job that they need to do. Vaccines don't assault the immune system. They exercise it.
Right. It's like running, I would imagine. You know, I don't do a lot of running, so if I were to go out and start jogging, I wouldn't get very far. But if I were exposed to more running, I would go farther and farther and get better and better as time went on.
Yes, you wouldn't be assaulting your muscular system.
Yeah. So this is something that I've heard a lot. Another radio guy by the name of Alex Jones, who a lot of people have heard of, was fond of saying that vaccines are basically mercury in cancer. And everybody keeps bringing up mercury as if it's this, you know, as if it's in it. It's basically you're just injecting yourself with mercury if you get a vaccine. Clearly, that's not the case.
Absolutely not. And the World Health Organization has come out strongly in favor of putting thimerosal with mercury into vaccines because it's a preservative and it allows multi-dose vials and allows us to reach more people and reduce the price.
So the mercury is in thimerosal and you said it acts as a preservative.
Yes.
And so it would be, that sounds like it'd be pretty necessary to get vaccines to different parts of the world, you know, like when the UN and the WHO, you know, goes to Africa or parts of Europe to get vaccines, like thimerosal would be key in those situations, wouldn't they?
Yes, and there's no evidence that it's ever hurt anybody. The kind of mercury that's in the thimerosal is ethyl mercury, and that's not like the methyl mercury that's in seafood and that was the cause of that Minamata disaster in Japan.
Right.
Ethyl mercury is rapidly excreted from the body, and it doesn't stick around long enough to do any harm.
That's really interesting. So ethyl mercury versus methyl mercury.
Yes.
Okay. It sounds a lot like the differences between alcohols. Is it similar to that, or?
I guess you could say that.
Okay. Now, alcohol question comes up. I'm going to ask it. So we have there's a lot of common concerns about vaccinations, and so let's sort of get these out of the way right away. One is there any evidence that getting many vaccinations at once is more or less effective than spreading them out over time, or more or less dangerous to a child receiving them?
Absolutely not. There's not a shred of evidence, and the people who are advocating that are going by their personal experience. There's a doctor who's the pediatrician to the stars. I can't think of his name right now, but he says, you know, I've heard parents say that their child developed autism symptoms after a vaccine, and I listen to the parents, and I go by my experience. He completely disregards the fact that that's been scientifically tested and has shown not to be true.
And you're talking specifically about the MMR vaccine, which I've heard horrible things and stories told by celebrities who assume that they know things just because they hear it through the grapevine from who's so-called important people. And that's scared the public enough. So I actually know people that I'm related to that unfortunately will not vaccinate their children just because of what celebrities say.
What's the MMR vaccine in this case?
Measles, mumps, rubella. There had been very, very bad science out there that says don't give your children the stacked vaccinations, which is the three at once. And the MMR, you actually give all three in one vaccination. And that's the one that people are saying, well, we can't do that. And because that's the type of vaccine that I see autism symptoms after they've been given, which is absolutely not true.
Now, this is something we hear a lot.
Yes.
Is some link between autism and vaccines. Is there any evidence whatsoever for that?
That has been thoroughly looked into. They say listen to the parents. Well, scientists did listen to the parents, and they did some very good studies. They looked at it from several different angles, and there is not a shred of evidence that autism is even correlated with vaccination, much less that there is any causal relationship.
The correlation part is an interesting thing, because you think of when do autism symptoms generally present themselves? Well, it's in early childhood, and isn't that the time when generally a lot of vaccinations are given? So, but you're saying that there really was not even a statistically significant correlation at that point.
No, there isn't, and now they're starting to recognize signs of autism at an earlier age, and they've gone back and looked at some of these children that supposedly became autistic after their shots, and looking back at their history, they saw there were clues long before they ever got the vaccine.
Okay, so they got the vaccination and they started seeing signs of autism, and there's the correlation causation problem there, right?
And the parents were looking for something to blame.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, understandable, but that's not science. That's parental concern for their children, which is natural, but it can lead in bad directions. And so another thing is that people are worried about is medical evidence supporting alternatives to vaccination, like homeopathic vaccinations or opting for natural immunity through chickenpox parties and the like. What's that about?
Homeopathic vaccination is water. And if you think water is going to protect you from an infectious disease, you're not thinking straight. And as far as chickenpox parties, well, the whole point of vaccines is so people don't have to go through the illness. So why would anyone want to give their children the illness? I think those people should be prosecuted for child endangerment.
Sounds about right. Chickenpox is a weird one for me because it's one of the few diseases where they came up with a vaccination for it after I had it. You know, it's when I was a kid and growing up, chickenpox was something that, you know, you just got. I actually had it twice. And it's just, you got it, and then you got over it, then you had the immunity, and then it was over. And then when I'm getting older, and my friends are having kids, and their kids are going to school, and they're going, oh yeah, they have to get their shots for chicken pox. I'm like, there's a shot for that now?
And most people think of chickenpox as a very mild disease, and
yeah,
most of the time it is, but it can cause serious consequences. It can cause chickenpox pneumonia, can cause encephalitis.
And oh, wow.
Children used to die of it every year in the United States.
Wow, it makes me missing part of my Disney World trip seem like nothing in comparison. Jeez.
So one of the fears that a lot of expectant mothers have is over diseases, and you know, want to protect themselves as pregnant mothers, and what is there a fear over vaccinating pregnant women, or does that actually help provide immunity to children?
Well, that depends on the vaccine, because live vaccines are usually contraindicated in pregnancy because they could potentially harm the fetus. But for other things like flu vaccine, we strongly urge women who are pregnant to get the flu vaccine because they're particularly vulnerable, and they're likely to have problems not only for themselves but for the baby if they get it during pregnancy.
There's actually new research that's out that says that that the likelihood of a child developing autism from a woman who gets infected with the flu during her pregnancy is actually much higher than the correlation between the woman not getting the or actually getting the flu vaccine and not getting sick.
And this is where it comes down. This is why we want to talk about this on the show is, we have these very lax rules in Washington State, and they're having very clear problems. For example, in 2011, two children under the age of 10 died in Washington from pertussis. And just 2 weeks ago, an infant in King County died from the disease. These these children died from an illness that is preventable, and that we have a vaccine for, and vaccines that we've been handing out for decades with no evidence of any problems whatsoever. And it's and that bothers me a little bit. And do we know the sort of the genesis of this anti-vaccination wave? Have you encountered have you encountered a lot of people who are anti-vaxxers when you go and speak?
Not very many, surprisingly. I guess the people that come to hear my talks are not part of that community. But there have been anti-vaxxers since the very first efforts when Jenner was using cowpox to inoculate people for smallpox.
Yeah.
They were anti-vaccine people back then.
Really?
Oh, yes.
Well, and smallpox is an interesting one because that's a disease that's basically people. I mean, I know there are samples at the CDC, but that's considered out of the environment now. People just don't get smallpox anymore.
And that really points out the value of vaccination, because when an infection is only spread from person to person, if we can stop it spreading, we can eradicate it from the world. There is no smallpox left in the world, and that means that no one will ever get it again after it killed millions of people over the course of history. But now not only do we not run the risk of getting it, but we don't have to get smallpox shots anymore.
And as part of the medical field's responsibility, we need to provide education and good, solid education to our patients. So that way, even if they get bad information, that there's a way for us to communicate to them, this is the reason why you need to keep yourself safe and your family safe. And to provide that good, solid education, they're able to make sound decisions about receiving vaccinations.
So as a medical professional in Washington State today, and especially as someone who works with pregnant women and newborn children, what does the immunization process look like when the laws are this lax?
Interesting, to say the very least. Now, I have to say that most of the patients that I've taken care of do receive the vaccination. So at birth, newborns usually receive the hepatitis B vaccine within the first 24 hours of birth.
Okay.
I've had patients who say absolutely no medications for my baby, and maybe I'll talk to my pediatrician first when they come in and see my baby. And then after that good solid talk with the pediatrician, they wind up actually vaccinating their kids. But what concerns me is the legislation and how lax it is and how easy it is to, especially when you're at, and when the children are of school age, how easy it is for a student to get into a school just merely from a signature from a religious leader saying that, oh, our religion doesn't believe in medication and vaccination. And okay, your kid can just walk into school. It scares me.
That's weird. Cause, from a personal perspective, in Illinois, when I was growing up, you absolutely needed to have your vaccinations up to date at, I believe it was at kindergarten, at fifth grade, and at the beginning of high school.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a bit of a mix-up with my vaccination papers in Chicago. And we weren't sure what vaccinations I have, what vaccinations I didn't. Honestly, the government losing my paperwork is a theme throughout my life. And as a result, I missed the first 3 weeks of fifth grade. Because I didn't, and there was, it was in Illinois, it really seemed like it was a very hard cutoff. You either were vaccinated to, you know, for public health reasons, or you were not allowed in public school. That's clearly not the case here.
It's clearly not the case here. And I grew up and started practicing in New Jersey, and our laws back there were actually just as strict, and it was very difficult to get your kid into school if you've never had any types of vaccinations and didn't have proof. And unfortunately, in your case, this is very similar to a lot of students, that if they can't procure their immunization records, they're not allowed to attend school unless they're absolutely able to do so.
And so in Illinois, it's in New Jersey, it's the same way, but then here in Washington, it's a little different.
A little bit different.
Washington has the highest rate of non-medical exemptions of any state in the union. And overall for the state, it's 5.7%. But it varies. And in one county, in Ferry County, 25% of students had non-medical school exemptions last year.
That's frightening.
That's an epidemic waiting to happen.
I'm a public school teacher, and I know that, you know, the first week or so of school, we have a lot of, you know, kids that are coming in, and they're starting high school, and maybe their paperwork's not all aligned. And you get a kind of a grace period. But then after that, you know, nurse calls you in and you can't come back to school unless your paperwork's all in order. And you either have proof of your vaccination or you have proof of blood draws, you know, with the antibodies. And, you know, or you have the documentation saying or my legal guardians have refused to vaccinate me under these grounds. What's it like in a county where 25% of the school kids, you know, are not vaccinated? I mean, what are the risks? What I would be nervous to be teaching there personally, or, you know, for myself, for my students, for, you know, those around me in the community.
Well, that's the thing. These people are not only making decisions for their own children, they're endangering everyone's public health. And there was a TV documentary a while back about vaccines, and they confronted one anti-vaccine parent, and they said, you know, if you don't vaccinate your child, you're endangering the rest of us. And she just flat out said, I don't believe that.
Oh, wow.
Yikes. And this is what it comes down to, and this is something that I've only started hearing about now that we're taking on the vaccination issues, is not only is the community immunity part of it, is that not only when you vaccinate, not only are you protecting yourself, but you're also protecting the public in some way. Can you explain how that mechanism?
Yes, the disease wants to spread itself as much as possible, and if it's in a community where there aren't enough people that can catch it, it dies out. And it depends on the disease and on a lot of things about what percentage of the population needs to be immunized. As an average rule of thumb, probably 85% is the cutoff. But for pertussis, it's much higher. It's up in the 90s. The problem with the pertussis vaccine is that even if everyone is vaccinated, they're not all immune because the immunity wanes and some people don't develop immunity. And there's always people who can't be vaccinated because they have immune suppression problems or they're too young or whatnot.
Is there a way to test whether or not we've achieved, community immunity? Is that a testable state, I guess?
Not really. I suppose you could test it by bringing the disease into the community and seeing what happened, but I wouldn't recommend that.
And unfortunately, even though you are immunized, you still are susceptible to the infection, but being immunized, you actually do have more minor symptoms, and the duration of the illness is much, much shorter, even if you are infected and you haven't been immunized.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because they did a study not long ago where they looked at children who'd been coughing for 2 weeks or more, and they found that 37% of them had serologic evidence of a recent pertussis infection. So there's a lot of mild pertussis out there that's not being recognized.
And is this the pertussis that's not covered by the vaccine, or is it because of, lax administration of booster shots, or is this just because your immunity is not as strong?
It's a combination of things. Immunity wanes, and that's why we're trying to get adults to get booster shots now.
So if you're not completely immune anyway, is this a reason to doubt whether vaccines work?
No,
absolutely not.
The vaccines very clearly work. They don't always work as well as we would like them to, mm-hmm. Particularly with the flu shot. For one thing, with the flu shot, older people over the age of 65, they don't respond as well to the shot. They don't develop as many antibodies. And that's why there's a new high-dose flu shot for older people that has four times as many antigens in it, and they're working on that. We tell people, if you're not going to get the flu shot for yourself, get it for grandma. Because yeah. Even if she gets her shot, she may not be protected.
And the same standards of care are in place for moms who are taking home newborns. We, before they leave the hospital, we are required to give them and offer to them the Tdap vaccine. So if they have documentation that they've had the booster shot within the last 10 years, then they're not required to do so. However, we highly, highly encourage that they get the Tdap even before they go home, because their newborns aren't immunized with the Dtap until 2 months. So that's 2 months of time where that child is even more susceptible to getting pertussis.
So it's not the vaccination that the child has which is protecting the child. It's the vaccinations that the parents and the people in the environment around that child.
Absolutely. My sister's a nurse, and I commended her when my nephew was born last year. She refused to to let anybody in the house if they hadn't had their Tdap vaccine
the
last 6 months.
Good for her.
And she got hers before she left. So
the concept that the Tdap vaccination wears off after time, that's a relatively newly discovered thing, is it not?
Well, we've always known that the immunity wanes over time. We just didn't realize how much it waned with pertussis, and they're working on developing a better pertussis vaccine.
Okay, so that's something that doesn't wane, that stays working longer, I guess.
Hopefully, yes.
And it's not just in Washington State. In other, something that we're discovering because of this new fact about the Tdap vaccine, it's not just here. But also there's a pertussis epidemic, and I think in the UK and in France. And what they're talking about and, you know, how this works is they're still, you know, obviously investigating it. But it seems like the UK has relatively strict immunization laws, but France does not. And it's people going between two places that are causing these outbreaks to occur.
Interesting.
Exactly. Polio and measles have pretty much been wiped out in the United States, but it's only a plane ride away, and we keep getting outbreaks because someone has traveled to another country and brings it back.
And that's the major source of outbreaks of those diseases?
That's the only source in the United States now.
Wow.
And if we could get enough people in other countries immunized, we could wipe out polio and measles just like we did smallpox. Polio was almost eradicated, and it broke out from Nigeria again because of religious concerns. The imams over there blamed the vaccine on a campaign by Americans to sterilize their children or infect them with HIV virus. So they became very afraid of it and stopped getting their vaccination, and the disease broke out from Nigeria to several other countries because of that.
That's unfortunately, it's a story we keep hearing, is just sort of somebody makes an offhand link between vaccinations or medicine that helps people and some superstition, and that prevents, you know, eradication or control of the disease.
Yeah.
It's a theme that we keep seeing again and again, is you know, for the purposes of liberty or for religious, you know, for religious purposes, I can't participate in modern medicine. And you know, that's understandable. We live in the United States. We place a high value on freedom and a high value on basically control of oneself. But when it comes to something like vaccinations, it becomes not just your own health, but clearly, as we just showed with the newborns, it's the health of everybody around you. It's really your vaccination really is a public health issue, is it not?
Yes, and the courts have come out to protect children. If the parents have beliefs that are endangering the children, the courts can intervene. And forgot what else I was going to say.
Well, I do know that Oregon has recently passed a pretty robust law protecting children whose parents, you know, for religious grounds, would have them withhold medical treatment. I also know that in Australia there was a recent case where a mother refused to vaccinate her children of all childhood vaccines, and the child's father, who was no longer with the mother, basically won a court case saying, yes, we can now vaccinate our 8-year-old daughter, who has already contracted pertussis and is at risk for multiple other childhood illnesses that would be, you know, not at all facing her if she had been vaccinated.
And there are legal precedents for things like quarantines. When the public health is endangered, the law can intervene.
I know that I was personally quarantined from my work site when I actually had shingles, and at that point, as a precaution, we had two staff members that were going through chemotherapy. We had two pregnant staff members, and we also had children on campus that I couldn't know who they were that were not vaccinated, and so they actually quarantined me from teaching middle school for a week until shingles had cleared.
And you didn't complain about them interfering with your rights, did you?
No, and healthcare facilities, hospitals are actually becoming more stringent with their employees and requiring that we get vaccinated for influenza. The facility where I work, we actually, before I was able to start working, I needed to get vaccinated with the Tdap, which I thought was awesome. I said, I love working for you guys. But if you decline to take the vaccinations, the policy for some of the hospitals are actually requiring employees to wear masks the entire flu season.
Wow.
Yeah.
I guess that's the way you have to do it to control disease.
Yep.
So I guess the question, like I said, this is going to be the first part of something we're going to be doing on a continuing basis, is vaccinations and the idea that children are dying that did not need to die if we just adhered to modern medicine and not inexpensive modern medicine. Mm-hmm. I'll ask you first, what would you like to see changed in the Washington state law, and how would you go about it?
I'd like to see all of the non-medical exemptions removed. I don't think that's going to happen because of the religious lobby, but that's what we need.
I agree. And until people get that education and get the information and unfortunately stop listening to the media and stop listening to the celebrities who have no medical training whatsoever, only then will things change. And unfortunately, people tend to believe more anecdotal evidence. So my friends, sisters, cousins, brothers, whatever, this bad thing happened, so therefore I don't want it happening to my kid. But meanwhile, there is no good science behind it. And people are making bad and unfortunately unsafe decisions for themselves and for their children.
You know, one of the really cool sites that I had found in preparation for this is the Immunization Action Coalition of Washington. And there's a setup all over different states, but the Washington one is a coalition of public health organizations and health departments and healthcare facilities and nonprofits. So check them out online, Immunization Action Coalition of Washington.
Well, Dr. Hall, thank you very much. And I look forward to talking to you again. Thank you for the information. And it's really nice to actually have experts on the show who know things. So thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
This is Ask an Atheist. 253-584-1480. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to do some current events.
I am the Queen of England. You must give me your lunch money.
Why?
Because it'll explode.
I don't know.
I'm the Queen of England. I know things.
Well, that makes sense. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because an authority says it doesn't make it true. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I'm melting!
So what does everybody want to play?
Something new?
Something with guns. Lots of guns.
Something that supports playing other than combat, you knob.
Jerk face.
All right, how about Dead Stars from Dame and I Publishing? It's a sci-fi game that uses the Universal Decay rules, a variation on our usual fantasy campaign system. This system has an emphasis on social and technical skills, yet allows technical characters to make thousands of different weapons.
Hey, psionics.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna be a bug with big freaking guns.
Shape-shifting tech head for me.
Check out DameandI.net for the sci-fi horror game Dead Stars, as well as a listing of other products and to get involved in the community forums.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the third Thursday meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480, and we're talking about preventable death in Washington State. You know, I hate to make the connection between other times when kids are dying in the news recently, but seriously, protection of the children is one of the basis things that civilization is supposed to do.
It's one of the strongest impulses that any mammal is built in with innately.
Yeah, yeah. And this has always been important to me, and the part of Ask an Atheist that I enjoy doing the most is stuff like this, is the quackery, is the science, is this is why you know, instead of just going around and saying, hey, no God, no God, that's a very short conversation. But there's clearly a lot of, there's a lot of really interesting and a lot of diverse stuff to talk about when we start talking about science.
Yeah, I think that I've really found that over the years that one of my real sticking points, something that really sticks in my craw, so to speak, is medical quackery and sort of new agey yeah. mumbo jumbo that people do put in place of actual medical science. And it, I think it probably makes me more immediately angry than any religious fundamentalism, actually.
The one image in the early days of Ask an Atheist when we were a TV show that really set me off more than anything was that couple in Oregon with the baby with the extra head growing out of her head.
Yeah, that there was this painful growth on the baby's eye. And the parents were refusing to get medical treatment for it because of religious rules.
Yeah.
And they had that religious exemption in Oregon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm an American. I'm all for, I'm all for freedom. I'm all for right to decide what sort of medical treatment you're going to get. But in cases of immunity and vaccinations and stuff like that, it's more than just you.
Or and making those... Go ahead.
And safety for your own child. I mean, unfortunately, people are making these decisions not for themselves, but for their children. And it scares me that they don't use reason to do so.
So I'm like I said, I'm American. I love freedom, but I also love alcohol. And I had this idea, and I'm having a little trouble getting it off the ground. So I'm gonna throw this idea at you guys. And if anybody has any ideas on how to make this work, I'd love to hear from you. You can go to askanatheist.tv or give us a call 253-584-1480. And it's a really basic idea. Shots for shots.
We will make this happen.
Well, it occurred to me when we were at a meeting, and when it was explained, when I found out that the Tdap immunization fades quickly, and it's now important for adults to get this immunization. And that's a lot harder to do when you have, public education or an educational system that is required for students and they have to go there. That provides a very excellent checkpoint to make sure that, that they're getting the immunizations that they need and that we need. But for adults, it's a little harder. We all work at different places. Some of us don't work at all. And sometimes it's necessary to incentivize things. So,
bribery.
Yeah. But there are issues of, insurance or, and that's something I would really like to do with Ask an Atheist in 2013. I don't know. What do you think, Mike?
I'm not really won over by the booze thing, but I definitely am happy about herd immunity.
Yeah.
I'm definitely a non-drinker, but I know that other people are.
Yeah.
I do not begrudge you your libations.
Sure.
But, if
well,
it's,
thanks.
I hear the edge there. Yeah.
If it's what takes to prevent somebody from walking around as the outbreak monkey, then I am all for it.
Thanks, Bill W. All right, we got some news. We've got some really fun news that we should do pretty quickly. The first one comes to us from Belgium. Federal prosecutors in Belgium have charged the Church of Scientology and its leaders as a criminal organization on charges of extortion, fraud, privacy breaches, and the illegal practice of medicine. This has followed years of investigation that was started by a complaint filed by the Labor Medication Service in Brussels, who initially objected to the cult's labor contracts and practices. This eventually led to a raid on the church premises in 2008. What's different here is they aren't being charged as a cult, but as a criminal organization.
Whoa, that's huge. Is this the beginning of the end for them?
It's been rapidly eroding for them in the last couple of years.
Yeah, they don't have they used to have sort of this force field that they would use against all criticism, which was that we would bully and sue you and harass you into silence, and that people were aware enough of it that they didn't want to report on it.
Right.
That's gone now.
Yeah.
That's completely gone. Anytime they do any sort of bullying tactic, it's going to be covered not just by the regular people who call out Scientology, but by the worst thing that anything can be, which is entertainment media.
And Tom Cruise got divorced, last year? So there goes the downfall of
Scientology.
We're definitely in there because Tom Cruise, I think if you look at his last divorce where he got everything he wanted, he was able to blindside Nicole Kidman into giving him full custody, full everything. And she knew the rattlesnake she would be fighting with if she decided to contest that.
Yeah.
But that's gone now. And you look at Katie Holmes, she really pulled out of there in a very smart way.
In a, shall we say, Mission Impossible-esque fashion?
I believe with the theme song playing in the background.
Yeah.
Da da da. That's Bond.
That's
Bond.
I don't know. Dun
dun dun dun dun dun. My pop culture merit badge has been taken away.
Yeah.
But yeah, I see that that's gone now. And now, not only is the media happy to talk about the Scientology cult, the story possibilities of this evil secret cult that's probably holding these weird Temple of Doom rituals and want to put the soul of L. Ron Hubbard into the body of Suri.
Let's talk about this.
Sexy news.
What are the things that they are being charged with? It's a criminal organization on charges of extortion, fraud, privacy breaches, and illegal practice of medicine. Mm-hmm. Illegal practice of... I could give you some examples of these. Illegal practice of medicine. They have something called the purification rundown, where you take enormous quantities of vitamins, including things like niacin. In some cases, stuff that just doesn't leave your body, but sticks around. And this is supposed to run out toxins and radiation.
Radiation?
Radiation.
From what?
This is something that L. Ron Hubbard was very into, was the concept of radiation and as-ising the nuclear bomb, as he put it. We can talk about privacy breaches. Well, auditing. That's pretty straightforward. Everything that you tell your auditor in Scientology goes into a file, which they can use against you. I mean, there's countless examples of that. You know, listen to our interview with Mark Bunker for some details on that. Fraud. That's pretty straightforward. I mean, that fraud is where you find it, I suppose, but it's, They do stuff like body routing. They have people take out credit cards and run up enormous charges on credit cards for auditing and for services, and then they're told to leave, you know, to basically ignore those credit cards once they're run up.
I know that they constantly accuse all sorts of people of all sorts of crimes. They say, like, oh, how does it feel to be a child molester? Calling people's places of business and defaming them. I mean, these people really have no bottom. Bottom. It's amazing the level to which they will sink when somebody is perceived as an enemy.
And then something that I think is really important to talk about, which people I don't think talk about enough, is the cult's labor contracts and practices. Labor contracts. We're talking about the billionaire contract for the Sea Org. Labor practices. We're talking about the Rehabilitation Project Force, which is another way of saying illegal prison. Is if you do something bad in Scientology and you're a Sea Org member or you're clergy or whatever, you don't... You know, what happens to you is you go to Rehabilitation Project Force. You go to, which is a prison. You eat gruel, you wear a uniform, you do labor basically for free, and that's where they put you. And they Heber Gentsch, the president of Scientology, has been said to have been there for several years and was only let out to attend the funeral of his son.
Yeah, and I know that David Miscavige, the current president of Scientology, has been accused on numerous occasions by other high-level officials who've left the church of physical abuse of his underlings.
Wow.
Yeah. So let's leave that one behind and talk about another mystical thing here. This is a fun one. A Saudi wizard threatens a labor minister. Wizard. Okay, I'll just read this.
They're all wizards.
In Saudi Arabia, a group of clerics are threatening Labor Minister Adel Fakke with deadly prayers over a decision he made allowing Saudi women to work in lingerie shops. I read that as linguine. That didn't make any sense. The religious leaders claim that if the minister does not reverse this decision, they will strike him dead with prayers intended to give him cancer. The previous labor minister died of cancer in 2010. Okay, I see the wizard thing here.
Okay. Long beard, robe, casting spells. What else do you need?
Yeah, that's true.
I do the same thing when somebody pulls out precatory prayers. I mean, if you look at the Vatican.
Precatory prayers?
Precatory prayers. I don't know. It's all BS magic stuff.
Okay,
I mean, they're essentially
right.
going, oh, we're going to call down the heavens to strike you dead with cancer, sir, because we disagree. The thing that I get with that is either they believe this is a real threat and that they really do have the power to strike people dead with cancer, or at the very least, they're fraudulent and they think that the person they're threatening it with believes it. Either way, it's pretty horrible, but it's also silly.
And they're saying, hey, we did it to the last guy, so you better watch your back because we're going to do it to you, too.
Are they actually claiming that they killed him with
cancer
prayers?
Yes.
In the news article that I found, they do actually imply that they did it. They don't say it, but it's almost kind of like a mafia guy showing up at your place of business and going, you know, the last play guy was here, he ain't around no more.
Hey, nice not cancer you got here.
That's precisely what they're doing.
So, okay. So, yeah. Robe dresses up in robes, casts spells. We're talking lawful evil here, right? As a cleric, lawful evil.
Or at the very least, neutral evil, because I think killing a government minister would be against the law.
Well, no, that would totally be lawful evil, because he has a strict rule set with, mm-hmm. In his religion that he follows in order to cast these spells. And he adheres to, he adheres to a law set, he adheres to a morality, and he stays within his rules as defined by him and other clerics. I think that's lawful.
Yeah, he's a wizard.
He's still trying to kill a labor minister with cancer, which I think denotes evil. But
I'm going to assume that the Saudi labor minister is going to make his saving throw and evade the spell.
Yeah.
He has magic gold cuffs that he's going to deflect spells with.
I think we should throw down the Sanaa Damaruku gauntlet right here.
Okay.
I don't know if you guys are willing to stand with me. This is a little bit scary.
All right.
But I will challenge those Saudi wizards, these clerics, to strike me dead with cancer.
Okay.
Bring it on. Bring it on. Bring all of you. Bring your magic rabbit's foot. Bring your crystals. Bring your crazy robes and beards. Your pointy hats. Bring
cool.
it on.
I'm. Why would I be frightened of that?
Well, I know that you're probably not.
Okay. I'm down. How about you, Eileen?
Sure.
The line is drawn.
The I'd line
be interested
has been drawn.
To see.
If we can get a
challenge made.
If we could get a really cool techno remix of some guy trying to kill us with prayer, like Sanaa Damaruku got, I'm totally down. Because that was awesome.
That was one of my favorite Sanaa Damaruku moments ever. If you don't know, he's the head of president of Rationalist International. He challenged some guru to kill him with magic on the air. And he danced around him, sprinkling him with water and waving a dagger at him. And I'm thinking, even if this magic is real, there is a much more efficient way to kill a guy with a dagger.
He tried to do that. He says, well, now I need to ritualistically cut you with this dagger. And Sanala's like, that will hurt me, yes. If you stab me with a knife, I will hurt, yes.
Yes, the dagger killed me, but it's kind of like the pickle jar. But the magic loosened it.
You see, that's all. The idea of trying to find somebody who will try to pray cancer into us. The thing is, the statistical likelihood of cancer, we're going to get it. I was going to suggest that somebody actually roll up this guy as a D&D character. So
like ninth level cleric? What would this guy, the minister, be? I don't imagine he'd be some kind of bureaucrat.
I mean, I'll be honest with you. I'm not as up on Dungeons & Dragons as I once was.
Neither am I. I never was. I hate to admit.
Yeah, I am a gamer, I have to admit. And I would like to see somebody, whenever somebody tries to use magic, I'd like to see a character sheet for this guy. I really would.
I'm probably going to give the minister here probably an extra +6 bonus for this guy also being a phony.
Yeah.
So I see a Halloween costume coming out of this, too.
Yeah, I'd like to see that. So if you go to Ask an Atheist and give us a character sheet for this guy, we'd like it. And that's all we got for today. My name is Sam. With me today was Mike Gillis and Rebecca Friedman. Thank you very much to Eileen Cavallo and Dr. Harriet Hall. My production assistant is Darren Garvin. As usual, the music is by Chris Coleman. Post show is at the Ale House, 5 o'clock, by TCC in Tacoma. See you next week.
Play Radio. Your conversation.